All righty, it's 4 o'clock. Call this meeting of the Board of Directors of Montgomery County Hospital District to order. We'd like to start out with the invocation. Everybody, please stand.
So Lord, we pray that you would invoke your presence upon each one of us. We pray over this meeting and the constituents thereof. We pray this in your Son Jesus' name. Amen.
All right, pledge. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Now the Texas flag.
I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible.
Play ball. About that.
Roll call.
Robert Hudson.
He's out.
Charles Shirley.
Here.
Kelly Inman.
Here.
Chris Grice.
Here.
Jackie Williams here. Jason Walker.
Here.
Bob Bagley.
Here.
All righty. Is there any public comment?
Yes, sir.
All righty. Special recognition.
Yes, sir.
I'd like to recognize Christian Ford, who is not here, for 10 years of service with the organization. So congratulations to Christian.
Yay.
All right, good afternoon. We have a couple of Employee of the Month. The first one, I will invite up District Chief Scott Sanders to present for Field Employee of the Month.
There you go, Chief. Good evening. All right. So, full disclosure, this happened in February, but I was hours late to getting it in for last for February's Employee of the Month, which is why I made it to March. So the field winners for Employee of the Month are Calista Pope and Reagan Jones. On 218, both of them were assigned to Ambulance 94, and they were dispatched to a call for a sick person, where the patient was unable to get out of the recliner due to being weak. Upon their arrival, they contacted me and said they were going to be extended on scene with the patient, who was unable to get out of her power recliner due to the patient's power being shut off for a few days while she was in the hospital and not able to pay her bills. They informed me they were going to try to help her help the patient pay her power bill and get her situated before exploring other options. They also told me that they were going to refer to community paramedicine for further assistance. I validated the plan, informed them that let me know if there was anything else they needed. About 45 minutes after that, I noticed they were still on scene, so I decided to check by with them, and I discovered that the crew was still on scene assisting the patient with the vital needs to ensure that she could stay home comfortably. They had already completed their assessment and determined that the patient did not wish for transport, and not wanting to leave her in the current living condition, they were able to assist the patient with paying her electric bill and have her power turned back on while still there. They did so by helping the patient contact her bank, troubleshoot her debit card, contacting the power company, and making multiple phone calls back and forth to be able to get it done. They also took the time to help clean the patient up and change her out of her sheets that the patient had on the recliner with fresh sheets due to her soiling herself during all this time. They were able to assist the patient with finding proper necessary paperwork to follow up with the doctor regarding her previous hospital stay, and even utilized the power in their ambulance and iPad to charge the patient's phone, charging block, and iPad. Yeah, iPad, phone, and charging block that were all dead because they've been used for an extended period of time. Patient was over the moon happy with the care she had received and cannot speak enough praises for these ladies. So I told that story just because I wanted to make sure they were recognized, because my biggest joy in seeing this being present for this is that if I had not gone to check on Ambulance 94, all these good deeds would have most likely gone unnoticed and unrecognized. For a call that could have lasted no more than 30 minutes of getting the patient out of the chair and signing the refusal, these two spent over 2 hours helping this patient with tasks that ultimately would have not been accomplished and may have led to more problems in the future for the patient. These ladies did not do this to get recognition they definitely deserve. They did it because they're good humans. This is the epitome of compassion and excellence, and something we strive in every employee. This is not something that can be taught, and we as an organization can only hope that is already instilled in our employees when they come to MCHD. In this case, these two employees, these traits shine brightly. Thank you for going above and beyond for this patient. Though maybe a few simple tasks in your mind, these memories will not soon be forgotten by the patient. Oh, you want me in there too?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. All right.
One, two, three.
All right. Next, I'll have Dr. Patrick come up, and he's got a few things to go over this evening for clinical excellence and employee of the month.
That's a tough one to follow. I'm not sure I can follow that one. That, I don't know, if you're not proud of that, I don't know what you can be proud of. But it takes a lot to make the wheels go around here in an EMS service. And some of that's those folks out in the field, actually getting people's electric turned back on, doing CPR resuscitation, taking care of heart attacks and strokes and traumas. But there's also a lot behind the scenes that has to happen as well. And I want to recognize one of those folks today. You know, if y'all have followed and listened, we've had some flux in the Department of Clinical Services and a lot of roles that have changed over the last 6 months. And folks have had to take on new chores, different chores, unexpected chores. And any of y'all that have worked anywhere, anytime change happens and uncertainty happens, it's unsettling. And so my nomination this month for non-field employee of the month is Andy Adams. Andy's been in his role as stroke and trauma quality coordinator for a long time. Several years with us and with me. And every single day, day in and day out, Andy does exactly what's asked with the most positive attitude that you can ever imagine. But over the last 6 months, with flux in DCS, one of the things that has probably frustrated me as much as anything as medical director is when calls like that happen and we want to discuss that with the crew, making that happen within our service with 40 trucks and 1,100 square miles and our nearly 400 folks out there in the field is actually really hard to figure out when that person is on shift next and what truck they're on and who their district chief is and who their partner was that day. Because if we're going to have a clinical conversation, oftentimes that's 5, 6, 7 people. And to get those folks on the same day is literally, you know, herding cats or juggling or whatever you want to call it. And without really being asked, Andy took that on and really solved a problem that seemed unsolvable. We have had so much streamlining of that process. Today we had our clinical, today's just a perfect example. We had our clinical quality review today at 2. We discussed several cases that needed to be reviewed, and we got 2 of them done between, you know, the end of that meeting and the start of this meeting. And what that does, it may seem minor, but it's really not, because operationally, those trucks are in and out of service quicker. There's less time between the case and the discussion and the education that happens, and that allows that to actually stick with the paramedics. There's less nervousness on their end. The district chiefs are now being involved much more efficiently, so the actual mentors and the teachers out in the field are involved. Just really taking a process that, you know, may seem like, in some sense, you don't really want to see how the sausage is made, but it has to get made. But it allows us to function clinically so much more efficiently. So I just want to recognize Andy for that, and for that reason, he's just a perfect nominee for Employee of the Month for March. So thank you, Andy.
One, two, three.
Thank you.
All right, my turn. A lot of good stuff to talk about this month. So today I have the honor of giving out the this month's Clinical Excellence Award. And so I want to talk about this case. We train a lot on taking care of really sick patients. And if you can imagine, training on adults and getting good at taking care of sick adults is difficult enough, but taking care of sick children adds another factor and layer of difficulty and stress. And so this is a case of a 10-year-old child that had called for shortness of breath. And when this crew arrived on scene, they found a 10-year-old with significant asthma, wheezing from the doorway, couldn't get air in, couldn't get air out, just really, really struggling. And they immediately started treating this kid. They gave breathing treatments, albuterol, ipratropium. They put a big mask of oxygen on to try to get the oxygen level up. They gave an injection of epinephrine, which we give to very severe asthma to try to get the airways open. Eventually, the child actually had to go on BiPAP, which is the big mask that kind of forces air and gives some pressure into the lungs just to try to get something expanded so air can move back and forth. It looked like the kid was doing a little bit better with this and actually got out to the ambulance, but unfortunately, he was just too ill, and the BiPAP wasn't working. He started to become unconscious and started vomiting. So they pivoted quickly, got the airway cleaned up and suctioned, and decided that it was going to be time to put a breathing tube in the airway. Chief Fillmore was on scene and assisted them in doing that. The patient was intubated with a tube in the airway well. At no point was there any drop in the patient's oxygen level. They maintained it the whole time. After the breathing tube was put in place, they gave another assortment of medications. They gave some magnesium. They gave some steroids, really everything that you could give a sick kid like this, and successfully and safely stabilized this kid and got them over to the hospital, where he was eventually admitted to the ICU. Now, he spent 3 days in the ICU and recovered incredibly well. It was determined that he had influenza, and that kind of kicked off his asthma and created all of this. And that child went home on day 3 from the hospital, totally normal, back to his regular life. I can't stress enough from this case that this child was so incredibly near death. If they had waited 15, 20 more minutes to call us, it would have been a completely different story, and it is 100% because of the actions of this medic crew and their decisiveness and the interventions and medications and the management that they provided this child, that not only was there an improvement in status, but this kid got to go home completely back to normal and continues to live a regular life. So it is my absolute honor to give this month's Clinical Excellence Award to Victoria Santos and Catherine Orton.
Okay, item 7, Mr. Grice.
Okay, Mr. Allen.
Yes, sir. So Randy Vaughn with Weaver is here to present the annual report and audit.
Hello. My name is Randy Vaughn, and I served as the engagement manager on this year's fiscal year 2025 audit at the Montgomery County Hospital District, and it's my privilege to come present the results of this audit this year. Little disclaimer, me and the engagement partner did meet with the finance committee and management last week, going over the same presentation, just more in depth. So today we're just going to take a step back and look more higher level, give you all that information that really matters for y'all specifically. But I'm happy to go into more detail if y'all have any questions. So please let me know. So we're going to go over the opinion, which is the most important part of the audit, some highlights over your general fund and your special revenue fund, and then any significant disclosures. So we conducted our audit in accordance with GAS and GAGIS. So what that means is that we performed a risk-based audit. So during our planning of the audit for this year, we sat down and we looked at what your material balances could be and what could go wrong. And we built audit procedures around those. When we deemed things as risky, it wasn't saying that this is what's happening. This is for sure happening here. It just simply meant that if something was going to go wrong that could materially misstate or mislead the users of your financial statements, it would be these areas. So we built procedures to focus on those. In doing so, I'm happy to announce that we had a unmodified or a clean opinion. This is the best opinion that you can get. It's what everyone seeks. We had no significant deficiencies, no material weakness. We noted no material noncompliance. Everything was smooth sailing. Can't complain. We're able to issue the highest level of assurance, which is reasonable assurance, just because we don't test 100% of everything. But with reasonable assurance, your financial statements are free of all material misstatements. This page, which you'll notice, is in the back of your financial statements in front of you. It's the second to last page. It goes over that. It basically summarizes unmodified opinion, no findings, no noncompliance. Normally, what you would see here is that there would be a section under Section 3, we're talking about your single audit. This year, you were not subject to a single audit because rules as of 10-1-2024 increased the threshold for a single audit from $750,000 to $1 million. This year, the two entities combined only spent $950,000 of federal funds, which we'll see that in a little later, but due to that, there was no single audit this year. So when you're looking at your general fund, it's important to note that this is the primary operating fund of the entity. It's where your property taxes, your charges for services, all of that activity gets housed here. So from looking year over year from between 2024 and 2025, nothing really significant on your balance sheet sticks out, just a required financial statement to show. But if you look at your income statement, which is where most people care about, right, the revenue coming in, the expenses going out, you can see pretty significant increases in your property taxes. This is largely due to an increase in the assessed values for property taxes as your property tax rate did decrease from 2024 to 2025, but that still netted to a $4.2 million increase. The other notable increase that you can see is in your charges for services, which relates to EMS, increased about $2.5 million, which is largely due to a 2.4% increase in rates from last year, as well as an increase in trips. So two positives increase your total revenue. If you're looking at expenditures, there's a total of about $3 million increase, which isn't anything abnormal. This is mostly due to payroll. So of that $3 million, $2.8 relates to payroll. That wasn't due to pay raises or anything of that. It just dealt with about 7.4% increase in headcount. So if we look at your, what we're going to call a non-major special revenue fund, which relates to the public health district, as you are aware, as of 9/30/2025, the activities of the public health district were assumed and put into a separate department of the hospital district. So to show you apples to apples, we're showing you last year's activity when it was considered a discretely presented component unit to it now being a special revenue fund. So on your balance sheet wise, nothing significant changed, pretty consistent, which is what was expected since their operations did not change. It's just who's performing those activities now. If you look at your income statement, same story. Nothing really significant changing here, but I did want to point out the intergovernmental revenue, which is what we were talking about earlier, is housing your state and federal funds. So while this does show above $1 million, that's including state funds. So your federal funds for this year were only about $950,000, so that remainder is state. And the reason it decreased from prior year is due to the COVID funding received back in 2020. All had to come to an end and be fully expended by 3/1/2025. So there wasn't a full year of COVID funding grants. This is back in line similar to pre-COVID times. So I would say that this would likely be your new normal. I want to go over your capital assets just because this is what users tend to care about because this is where your cash is typically going. Is it helping you build your entity? It's helping you do the services that you are here to perform. So as you can tell, I mean, it increased from about $44 million to $50 million. Your largest addition this year was vehicles. Not a surprise given the operating activities of the entity. So nothing really crazy there. We vouched all material additions. They were valid additions in the current year and recorded in the proper period. Then looking at your long-term liabilities, because this is cash that you owe in the future, none of them swung significantly. They actually decreased from prior year, largely due to just scheduled payments. There wasn't any crazy increases that we could see. So entities functioning as it should, and you're well able to make these future payments. And you can tell that the healthcare claims, we have a note saying that it was restated due to the governmental merger, which if you need additional information on, it's on note 14, but that's basically saying the public health district was a discretely presented component unit, and now it's part of your primary government. And I think it restated that healthcare claims balance by $18,000, so nothing significant. So before I open up the floor for any questions, I did want to reiterate that we are issuing an unmodified opinion, the best of the best. We experienced no difficulties during the course of the audit. This is all attributed to your amazing accounting staff for being able to provide us accurate, timely information, handling all of our probably millions of questions. They have built a secure internal control environment. So that's something that you should be really proud of, because while everyone strives for that, it's not the reality for most places. So with that, do you all have any questions?
I just have one quick question. On the balance sheet, you indicated that the on public health balance sheet, you indicated that the public health number, cash assets went from 2.3 from 2.7 in 2024 to 2.3 in 2025, a drop of about 428,000, which is most of the drop of the overall total fund balance. You indicated that that was not out of the ordinary. We can
answer that question for you.
Okay, go ahead.
That was, the county didn't provide the funding that was contracted, and so we were able to drop our reserve that we had based from 1115 waiver funds to cover that deficit. So we estimated that deficit to be around $600,000, which is why they were paying us, are currently paying us $50,000 a month. So we were very close in that estimate.
Correct. I understand what caused it. Oh. What I was getting at is you indicated that it was not out of the ordinary. I was just wondering how you came to that conclusion.
When looking at the dollar value of the $400,000 as a whole, it wasn't significant.
Fair enough. Okay. Any other questions?
No.
All right. Well, thank you.
Perfect. Thank you all so much.
Thank you, Randy.
The other Randy.
Yeah. Miss. What?
Oh, to make a motion. Sure. Make a motion that we accept the audit as presented.
Second.
All in favor to accept the audit, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Passes. All right, Randy, up.
A brief repeat of my report, just so that if people want a general overview, this is it. We have been concerned for a long time about AI in our computer systems. We have a lot at risk here since we do 911 for the county on the second floor. And we have a very, very conservative IT group who tries to make sure that we're safe. That being said, currently the only AI that we use is the AI that comes embedded in our systems that we deploy here, that we've bought. But we realize that AI is becoming more and more important, and we're going to need to use it in the future. And so we are trying to be both timely and wise in the way that we consider the use of AI in the future. So we've begun talking to some consultants who can maybe help us with our AI journey to get started on the right foot, and to move forward in the right fashion. And we're taking information from consultants, and we'll probably also be taking some bids from some consultants so that we will have a consulting package that will allow us to be consulted with regarding ways that we may need to have AI to make us more functional and more efficient in the future. So that will be one of our goals for this coming year. Our billing department, Ms. Letty Sully, I'm stealing Brett's thunder here. She was the third person who was hired in the billing department at MCHD. She celebrated her 25th anniversary last week. She also retired last week. And so, excellent employee. We're very happy that she had a fantastic retirement. We wish her very well. She immediately went out and bought a new car that afternoon, so I think she's on a good journey. ESD 1, which is North County Fire Department, Station 96, which is MCHD's Station 16, will have their opening event for this new station that was built. We're partners in that station, and it's located at 11111 Calvary Road. It's just north of Willis, and the opening celebration will be Friday morning, March 27th at 10 o'clock. Everyone's welcome to come. I'd also like to steal some more of Chief Campbell's thunder. Ms. Kelly Gonzalez has been working as our interim alarm manager. She's just now been promoted to permanent alarm division chief. Did I do well, Chief?
Yes, sir.
Oh, thank you, sir. we also began a new EMT, new orientee, new employee orientation this past week, and the senior staff met with all the new orientees to talk about MCHD, all the things that we do, and expectations of our employees. Over the next 90 days, our accounting package and our purchasing software package they're moving along, but it's very important that we get these things right. So Brett and his staff are working very diligently on our accounting and software packages. We need to replace the station at Station 13 in Willis, and so that's something we'll be focusing on over the next 90 days. And also, we have an opportunity to purchase property at Station 15 in the Conroe area, which we'll hope to do soon. We also have lost our division chief of quality and our division chief of clinical services, and so we're working on replacing those people. Beginning in April, we'll have quarterly department reviews so that each department can review operations, their performance, discuss employee morale, projects that they're doing, and talk about the capital budget that they have and where they are in regards to the year. And then finally, we're going to work over the next 90 days, continue to work with AI. That's my report. Any questions? Thank you.
All right, thank you. All right. Chief?
Mr. Johnson has completed my report. Thank you. just to reiterate a few things, it's hiring season for us in the field. 16 EMTs we're onboarding. The paramedic application process is open. We're going to work diligently to fill some pretty key leadership positions in EMS and in alarm and in the field over the next really 60 to 90 days. Every day that we're down, leadership, it's big out there and it's moving fast in the field, so we want to get some the right people in here in a timely fashion, but we're really looking for the right people to fit these roles. And by the time you see us this time next month, we will be through the rodeo and through with Iron Man, so it's special event season. We will look a little bit weathered 30 days from now, but it's an exciting time for the county. It's the weather's great. It's special event season, so we'll be at all the major special events to staff those and be out there with our ambulances and providing some EMS services. So that's all I have. Happy to answer any questions.
I have a few.
Yes, sir.
We have until 6 or 7.
Say that again.
Just kidding. Looking at the numbers that came back, it's just I'm always amazed at how well we do as an organization. Our people are just over the top. I mean, we're ranked 14th out of 255 organizations. We're the top 6% of the nation. Sitting here looking at some of the stats that you had out. Our scores were higher than the national averages in every category, and our scores were higher than the Texas average in every category. No other organization can say that or do that. our training, the equipment, the everything that this organization is because of the people that that are here serving us, and it's just we couldn't ask for more. I like the I was looking at the turnaround times, and it seems like some of them have gotten better when we've only got 3 minutes difference between Memorial Hermann and Conroe. That's a good change. There were a couple of other things. So I was looking at this Senate Bill 8 that you'd put on here.
Yes, sir.
There's a strong push to capture violence against EMS providers. I haven't heard of any within our organization. Have we had any?
We have, I would say, a handful a year where it's true physical assault against one of our providers, whether it's a kick in the face or a punch or a hair pull. It's unfortunately increasing in our industry. There's certainly like verbal abuse happens on calls. I think part of the reason why you see our physical assault numbers low is really multiple things. For one, our customer service scores speak to that. We hire really good people with really good hearts who just want to be nice to people. And it's really hard to kick and punch that person who's being nice to you. Sometimes it does happen, but through the education department, we have training. It's called verbal judo. Verbal judo is a class that works on de-escalation and how to kind of use your words to navigate out of tense situations. And then unfortunately, there's a handful of a year where we actually have physical abuse, but Texas is trying to work hard to capture that so that as an industry, we can improve provider safety in the field.
So are we pressing charges on people when they do this?
Our recommendation to our crews is always, you have the choice to do that. We want you to make the choice for you. Our recommendation is we have zero tolerance for that, but ultimately we can't do it for our providers. And some of them will say, you know, substance abuse, like it's part of the job. And some of them are like, I'm absolutely pressing charges. So, but we try to guide them in the direction to.
I'd like to hear about this at board meetings.
Yes, sir.
Did not know that we were having these problems. I know that it's going on in different communities. I just didn't know it was happening here at home.
Yeah.
Is there any thoughts in the industry about putting body cams on us like the cops do?
Texas, like many things, is leading the way in body cameras and EMS. It has become a polarizing topic for many reasons. The hospitals are nervous about having us wear body cameras in their hallways,
of course,
which there's some discussion about how to manage that. There's something about healthcare where it's private, right? And it's you and a provider, and that could be sacred, right? That could be very special time. So recording that, there's a lot of debate about it. No one has the right
security
answer.
Of our people, though.
There is that component too. So we feel like we see pros and cons to both, right? People will say we lost their driver's license. Well, if we were able to capture that or their bag of medicine, there's some benefit to. We only see one side of the story. Also, every call we go on, we're likely being recorded by a Ring door cam, a camera, right. Anyway, so we might as well have our side. But also, there's a component to healthcare that this is a conservative county. How do we message that to 750,000 people? How do we retain the footage? I mean, it's something that we constantly talk about, but we think that we have more conversations to have.
Well, I know it's a conservative county, but if we're having these attacks on our personnel, we need to be
able to capture it. That's
exactly.
A component too.
We need to be able to protect them.
There are some additional things that we do to try to keep our people more safe. We stage on specific calls that look like they're going to be unsafe, and maybe some say that we may overstage, but it's better to be safe than sorry, and we'll not go in until the sheriff's department gets there.
I've had complaints from SO about us not going in. And,
right.
And, you know, if it's not safe, we're not going in, but they don't like it.
All right.
Thanks.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All righty. COO report, Ms. Miller.
I too had thunder stolen. So I'll skip 13 and 15 because we're going to talk about that later. Station 46, what we've been calling Station 46 on FM 2854, was originally purchased with the plan that we would move out of our Wood Forest station. Over the years, it's taken us to convert this station. We've made the decision that it's better for us to keep a 12-hour truck at that station, Station 46, and rename the Station 48 so there's no confusion there. With the Wood Forest area growing so quickly, it's our best bet to remain in that area. They will give us the opportunity in the future if we want to make that a 24-hour truck and build out their a part of their station that's not built out so that we can stay overnight there. They said they will give us that opportunity. So we think it's best to keep a footprint there with the addition of two-step farms and other things that are going in along that way as well as the traffic pattern. So that's the reason for the change in that station number. We have two big projects coming up, the replacement of Chiller 1. We replaced Chiller 2 last year, and the boiler replacement. And so those things are in progress. And it's expected to finish during the summer. Radio is still working on the VHF system update. Everything's been ordered. Justin went to San Antonio and worked with them on this, how to make the switch over, because we have to leave the current one live while we're replacing. And the shelters at the towers are very small, so the dance within there to get the equipment out and the equipment in and not lose service is quite a planning feat. And so they plan to do the cutover in August after they've practiced and got it down, so it'll be pretty seamless transition. IT has started the process to move our production virtual servers into the new server system. The team did extensive backup testing and failover of the system to ensure the system is programmed correctly and reliable. We are already seeing, last month I talked about Ramageddon and the increased price of computer stuff. A bid from this year to last year showed an over 300% increase in the same product. Wow. Calvin looked into that in March, and so for budget next year there may be some shocking prices listed in there. As we prepare, Calvin is doing best he can to buy things early and now while they're cheaper, because this is predicted to continue until 2028. And it's related to AI because they're buying up all the products and causing it to go up. In public health, Megna expanded on her report, and Mr. Bagley asked for additional information next time, so we'll provide additional numbers related to that, how many confirmed cases we have of salmonella, graphs, and things of that nature that we have. We just haven't included them in here like we did in the previous public health reports, but we can expand on that. It's not as impactful monthly as it was quarterly in that environment, but we can do that monthly. And I will add the clinic data. We're seeing a big increase in TB in the county as well as the region. And the TB nurse at the region asked if she could come and speak to you and just go over some of that information and share it with this board. So if that's okay with you guys, I'll schedule her to come to a future meeting. And today is World TB Day.
I'd like to see it.
Yeah. And on that happy note, any questions?
Thank you very much. Okay, healthcare services. Today.
Oh, hi. Hello. Hi. Good afternoon, everyone. Hi. You have a copy of the HCAP report, so I'll just highlight some of the key updates. And so what we're observing with some patient assistance programs is that they are making the transition slowly from paper applications to electronic-only applications, which then presents sort of a barrier for our clients. But our pharmacy representatives are aware of this, and so they are walking our clients through the process, as well as reaching out to other, you know, medical providers, just to show them how to fill out the application online so there are no gaps in medication services. And we want to make sure that access to medications are timely, so they're on top of that. And also, we signed a contract with Tomago Healthcare. at Medicaid rates. So this is huge, and we're excited about this partnership because what it does is allow our clients to have more access to providers, especially primary care providers. Also, for our clients who live in the Magnolia area and they have transportation issues, this allows them to be able to access services through Tomagua. So we are excited about that, and it's on the agenda for the board to approve. And so,
I just want to add there, this has been being worked on for years and years. Mr. Fawn was the chairman of our board when this work started to get them a contract with them.
Wow. It's amazing.
Yay. Yeah. Okay. And just quick eligibility data, we're seeing steady growth in our applications monthly. And so for February, we received 180 applications. We had the privilege of serving 307 clients, which is good. And also we added 55 new clients to the program. So that's all I have. I'll be happy to take any questions or comments.
We still have a high number of people that aren't providing the information to be able to get on the program.
Yes.
And I know y'all were following up. I'm sure you still do.
We're full,
Why is it such an issue? I mean, it's like...
It's the requirements. A lot of people who are eligible for our program have lost paperwork, documents. They don't have their documents, and so they have to try to get these documents. And at one point, we had a campaign, ID Me, because we realized, for example, one of the documents that people cannot provide is their ID. It's either lost or in a different state. They just have to get that, and sometimes it's so difficult because it's not just one paperwork. You need to get your ID. You need several. You need a social security, you know, card. And so sometimes we work closely with the community paramedics to see how we can get some of these documents. But again, we try to work with them as much as we can. But again, we have requirements, and it's just unfortunate that they have to still face all these barriers to get the documents that we need. But wherever we can help, we do help. And you all have been very successful. They work with our case managers, and they've been successful in getting some of the paperwork. Also, it's people getting out of the hospital, and we're trying to get documents from them. That's been difficult. I know in the past we worked closely with the hospitals where we were able to go in and get the documents while they were in the hospital, which was great. But then that fell by the wayside when COVID happened, so we couldn't go into the hospital. So it's just different things. People are just not, it's just documents, trying to get their documents, trying to gather. Again, we'll work with them as much as we can. For example, for the people experiencing homelessness, we have figured out ways to where we can work with the entities that they constantly go to, like Under Over, Salvation Army. We try to work with them to see, okay, what can we do while still staying within our policy? What can we accept from them? So we try to work around it, but again, we have requirements and people need to, the onus of proof is really on them. And so we try to call them, remind them, see what we can do to help. Sometimes they just get overwhelmed. Competing priorities is also a huge factor. We are wanting to help them with medical care. Some of them don't have food. They don't have clothing. They don't have the basic necessities. So, again, we have to be cognizant of that, and we just have to be respectful but help them in whatever way we can.
Yeah. They have a time period, too, from the time they file to,
to get
all their stuff in.
Yes, that's correct. It's 14. So it's 14 days. From the time we send out a request, but then the application is good for 30 days. So even if we send out a request, they don't respond within 14 days, we have to make a decision, close out the case, but we can still reopen. If they turn in the paperwork we're needing, then we can reopen the case and just determine eligibility.
And they have extended the applications on some significant circumstances.
Right.
I know trying to get paperwork from Social Security, it takes... longer than that.
Yeah,
I did.
Yes.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you. All right. Mr. Allen.
Yes, sir. So I'm just going to plow through regardless of stolen thunder.
Seems to be going around today.
So we are still in the midst of budget season, so the managers are currently preparing their budget submissions. They'll be submitting those to accounting by April 15th. And this year, I know you're used to seeing Excel spreadsheets. This year, they're going to be preparing and submitting through the software. So it'll be a little bit new and different, a little bit of a learning curve, but everybody seems to be doing well with it. Obviously, we completed our audit. And so that was really good news. We got a good report. But I want to recognize Shannon Wolven, our controller, and her staff. They do a tremendous job each year in getting this done. In addition, Rhonda Cottrell and her staff in billing, and then truly all the managers and staff throughout there, they're all part of our internal control process, all part of the communication process and making that happen. So really, really, really a team effort to make that happen. Oracle implementation, we're continuing to work through it. Still going to be repeating this for quite some time to come. Anything significant, I'll bring forward.
Do you have any kind of idea on time frame?
No, sir. We're working through things with them in terms of software and efficiency. Some things that you wouldn't expect to occur have occurred, and they're still working to get fixed. So Oracle NetSuite is, I think, over 40,000 implementations worldwide. NetSuite for government is obviously smaller, it's newer, but it was supposed to be the same structure with just the four government overlaid over that. But in doing so, there are some issues. In terms of our financial reporting, we're still doing some backflips, and they're doing some backflips. When we run raw financial statements, we end up seeing net income on the balance sheet, somewhat problematic. So they're working through that. Our accounts payable, we thought we'd really be seeing some more efficiencies in that, and it's actually less efficient at this point. We're hoping as we go forward that we can work with them and make that more efficient, but right now we're using a light-duty person to kind of help us with some of that that we're not getting accomplished as timely as we would like. In terms of fixed assets, they're still working on that. We're about 6 months in now, and we haven't done anything with our fixed assets yet for fiscal year 2026. What they're working on now is actually being able to do a sale of an asset. Things that we would have thought, and you know, you ask and you go through the process of choosing a vendor that would be in place, and so it's somewhat of a surprise, and so kind of working through that. So I don't really have a time frame, but we're pushing them, and as we get opportunities to speak with people at higher levels there, we're not missing those opportunities.
Okay.
Ambulance Supplemental Payment Program, all of our submission, we've given everything over to our consultant. It's normally due the 31st of March, but it has been pushed back to April 30th because HHSC implemented new software and it didn't go as smoothly as they wanted. So we're done short of getting the information back from the consultant, reviewing it, and doing the submission, final submission. Tobacco settlement, due March 31st, we actually submitted today. And then property and casualty insurance, so it's our renewal time. The new year starts April 17th. We've had some staff turnover this year, a little bit slower getting things together. They're currently out, Dave being McGriff, is currently out going through the RFP process, bids, negotiations, and we'll be ready to present that on April 7th to the board. Billing, as Randy said, Letty Sullivan, after 25 years, retired, and we had a great little celebration for her last week. We're excited for her, but we'll miss her. Billing software conversion, it's been a year, so we started dates of service March 1st of last year. It is going very well. We've gained a lot of efficiency. We've seen improvements. We're still tweaking, and Rhonda and her staff will continue to tweak as we really perfect it and make it better and better. So truly excited about that. Collections for February were $2.3 million compared to last February at $2.1 million. And then procurement. Procurement is a new department for MCHD. We've kind of grown into that. And that need is there in terms of compliance and just practices. And then converting software at the same time has been somewhat challenging. And so we are meeting, procurement is meeting with their internal customers to get this right, to make good processes and smooth process and get everyone educated. And then, of course, they worked this last month on the RFP for legal services.
All right. Any questions? Thank you, Mr. Allen. Item number 9, Mr. Bagley.
A proclamation to designate the week of April 12th through 18th, 2026 as National Public Safety Communicator Week. Whereas the Montgomery County Hospital District provides 911 dispatchers who work daily to protect and promote the public safety to the citizens of Montgomery County, Texas, and whereas dispatchers are more than a calm and reassuring voice at the other end of the phone, they are knowledgeable and highly trained individuals who work closely with other medical, police, and fire personnel. They offer quality care and dramatically improves the survival and recovery rate of those who experience sudden illness or injury. And whereas the members of emergency dispatchers and other communication specialists who help to protect our health and safety and engage in thousands of hours of specialized training and continuing educations to enhance their life-saving skills. And whereas the Montgomery County Hospital District Board of Directors hereby supports and recognizes the Montgomery County Hospital District's communications personnel as an integral partner to the citizens of Montgomery County. Now, therefore, it be resolved that Montgomery County Hospital District Board of Directors of Montgomery County, Texas, does hereby proclaim the week of April 12th through the 18th, 2026, as National Public Safety Telecommunicators Week.
Second.
And we have a motion on the proclamation and a second. All in favor of the proclamation, please say aye.
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 All opposed? And it passes. Very good. Item number 10, Mr. Walker.
I'd like to consider an act on warranty renewal for the Zoll cardiac monitors.
Do you have a second?
Second.
We have a second. Mr. Grice, any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And it passes.
I want to keep getting good ones because I keep needing them.
Do we need to buy your own?
Yeah.
All right. Item 11, Mr. Walker.
I'd like to consider an act on the Duckanov annual agreement renewal.
All righty. You have a second?
Second.
Ms. Williams, second. Any comments? All righty. All in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed? Passes. Thank you. Item number 12, Ms. Inman.
Consider an act on health care assistance program claims from non-Medicaid 1115 waiver providers.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Second, Mr. Grice. Any comments? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Passes. Number 13.
Consider an act on ratification of voluntary contributions for uncompensated care to the Medicaid 1115 waiver program of health care assistance program claims.
Do you have a second?
Second.
Mrs. Williams, seconds. Any comments? All in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed? None. Passes. Number 14. Ms. Inman.
I can't find 14.
Is it tomorrow with
him? No, we did 15.
Is this it?
14?
I'm on it.
Oh, the new provider.
Consider an act on the new provider contract.
There you go.
Ratification. Where is it?
And do we have a second?
Yeah, I don't have it on my.
They did
second.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Real quickly, I'm not sure we have a copy of it. Do we have a copy of it?
Yeah, that's right. It's that.
Is this it?
That's it.
That's it. That's
yeah. They're contract. Just adding a provider to the. Yeah.
Oh, okay. They're adding a provider. I apologize. All right. Any comments? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? All righty. Passes. Number 15.
Mr. Allen.
Mr. Allen.
Yes, sir. So the board does have my report before you. And looking at cash investments at the end of February, they were at $79,600,000 compared to a year ago, February, $76,000
$76,953,000, a 3.4% increase. In terms of our income statement, year-to-date, we are in good shape, and tax revenue is at 99.2% collected through the end of February and 95.3% for the year. As of today, for the year, we're at 96.3%. So by March, I had said we'd probably be 96%, and we did achieve that. So that's good news. EMS net revenue is at 42% of the total budget, which is in line. And so other revenue is the only item that is short, and that is just due to timing. The tobacco settlement hasn't been recorded yet, and the ambulance supplement payment program hasn't been recorded yet. Those are the major items, but then some other smaller ones as well. Payroll at 39.5% year-to-date, operating 35.4%, indigent care 26.5%. Indigent care has just been a little bit less than expected. There was a true-up in February, which actually incorporated one extra month, and so that'll be corrected and was corrected on the March agenda item that you just approved. So that'll come back in line. Overall, revenue expenses year-to-date, revenue over expenses are at $27,495,000. Right. And primarily just time of year, the tax revenue.
Right. Very good. Well, thank you. All right, number 16, Mr. Grice.
I make a motion that we approve the invoices in the amount of $5,467,578.57.
Second.
You want to name the, that's a little higher than normal, so what are they?
Sure, it is a little bit above the expected average, but we, some of the significant items were our ACE Tech, which is our vehicle analytics software, is $83,000. Texas Mutual quarterly premium, $133,000. Central Square, so annual maintenance for the CAD, $310,000. Air performance, we replaced boilers here at admin, so $184,000. Daily Wells, the purchase of portable radios, $419,000. Fraser, we received four ambulance modules. Four new ambulance modules were mounted, so that was $1.2 million. And then Law Construction, who's working on Station 48 up on 2854, that was $805,000. So some pretty significant items, which just kind of threw us a bit above average for the month.
All right. Any other comments? All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Passes. Number 17, Mr. Grice.
Make a motion that we accept the surplus and salvage report as presented.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Ms. Williams, seconds. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And number 18, Ms. Williams.
18 is missing from the agenda.
Oh,
yeah.
It's a minute.
Okay. Over there, but it's on here.
You can write it off here.
Consider an act on the Secretary's report for the February 24, 2026 regular BOD meeting.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Mr. Bagley, second. All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? All right, passes. Now we're moving into our executive session. We're going to convene into executive session as authorized by the Texas Open Meetings Act to deliberate in closed session on the following matters authorized under the Texas Open Meetings Act. Number one, regards to Section 551.072 of the Texas Government Code for deliberations about real estate property and under 551.071 to receive legal advice both regarding property on 200 South Kennedy and Willis and other comparable properties. Number two, in regards to Section 551.072 of the Texas Government Code for deliberations about real estate property under 551.071 to receive legal advice both regarding property on 809 West Seaman Street, Conroe. And number three, regards to Section 551.074 of the Texas Government to deliberate on appointment, employment, evaluation, reassignment, duties of a public officer and employee, General Counsel And at this time, we convene into executive session at 4:59.